Hey everybody, it's Mike. Welcome or welcome back to the Revision Church Podcast. While you're here, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Revision app, which is actually the best way to get access to new content and share it with friends. You can get the app by texting Revision app to 77977. Thanks for listening today. My hope is that this message will be helpful for you and would inspire you to take the next step on your faith journey.
Amen. You guys can take a seat. My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors at Revision. I'm excited to be here today. How about you? All right. Well, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers in the room and all the mothers watching online. I think we should all just take a second to be grateful for all the incredible women, the moms, the grandmas, the aunts, the teachers, and everyone else who have sacrificed themselves to make our lives better. I know that I would not be who I am today if it wasn't for an incredible, self-sacrificial, amazing mother. So let's give all the moms a hand. We want to celebrate all of you guys today. And just to celebrate Mother's Day, we have scratch cupcakes in the entryway on your way out the door for anyone who is a mother or has a mother. So if that's you, you should take one on the way out the door, all right? Chosen, week two. Last week, my buddy Chad Erlenborn was here, and he shared a little bit of his heart with us for the poor and the vulnerable people around the globe. And we're actually continuing this series, and Chad is back. He flew to Iowa and then home to California and then back to Iowa again. If you didn't get the chance to hear him last week, if you weren't here watching online, he's an incredible guy. He's a pastor, author, professor, father of four, former hockey goon who played against the Bucks right up the street, and just an amazing human being. So would you guys put your hands together and give Chad Erlenborn a warm Revision welcome this morning?
We are excited. That's what happens when you get too powerful on your mic. You get a little feedback. I am just so delighted to be back here at Revision Church. So we completed the Matthew 25 challenge, and now we're celebrating Mother's Day. This is an exciting day. For those of you that took the Matthew 25 challenge, well done. I was able to talk to some folks here at the front, and they talked a little bit about what they learned, how they grew closer to God and closer to the poor, and that was a sweet moment. So thank you. We're still going to take that last challenge today. So those of you that didn't take the challenges, there's a final one today, and then next week's going to be exceptional. But I also want to honor the mothers and the daughters and the women online, women around the world. We respect you. We honor you. We appreciate you. I'm married, got four children, and it's a pretty good group. I love being a dad. I mean, I don't know about the dads in the room. I love being a dad. I'm a pretty good dad. You know, I'm average, maybe a little bit above average. My wife, fantastic mother. Now, she may not think she's fantastic. She may not feel like she's a great mom, but she is. And maybe you're a mom here, and you don't think you're a great mom, or you're a grandmom, and you don't, you know, sometimes feel like you're doing a great job. You are. You're not a perfect mom. Nobody is. Maybe your Facebook posts aren't as good as somebody else's, but you're doing a fantastic job. Well done, mothers. We appreciate you. We honor you. And as I was reflecting upon our parenting, I kind of had an idea to just reflect upon some of the good times. Like, so there's the good, the bad, and then the great. And, you know, what we talk about, what we celebrate gets repeated. So if you talk to your mom or tell her the things that she did well, because that's what gets repeated. And I was thinking about some of my wife's greatest hits. Like if she had an album, what would be some of her greatest hits as a mother? And one of them came to mind when my kids were younger. And my kids were 6, 4, 3, and 6 months old. And as you can see from the photo here behind me, it's a thank you card to our friends and family, because my wife and I heard the words, every family fears that your daughter has cancer. And so we walked through a 3-year journey of chemotherapy, and it was a real battle. Michaela is doing well now, but it was a very challenging time. And some of you have gone through that challenge. Some of you have gone through much worse. But my wife, she was fantastic. One example was when the kids were young. We were just entering chemotherapy. Michaela lost her hair. She was bloated, feeling sick. And my wife was tucking the kids into bed at night. And this one night, Annika, her younger sister, they were sharing the same bed. They did that periodically. And Michaela asked her mother a question. She says, "Mom, did God give me leukemia?" And Christine paused, prayed, and answered, "No, of course not. God is our rock. God's our strength. God's our joy. God gives us the strength to fight leukemia." And she went on to say, "You know, Michaela, we all face hard things. You know, Mommy was in a car accident. Daddy hurt his knee. Caleb has an angel kiss. We all face hard things, and we don't get to pick them." And Michaela was quiet, sort of listening to her mother, and then she pointed to her younger sister and says, "Well, what's Annika going to get?" She says, "Annika's going to get something, because we all face hard things, and we don't get to pick them. And on Mother's Day, we want to honor all the moms, all the grandmothers, all the mothers, all the women around the world that pick wisely in the face of hard things. Because we all get challenges. We lose our jobs. We have health challenges. We're in this global pandemic. We face difficulties at home, work, and school. Where parents split up and kids get cancer. We all face hard things. We don't get to pick them, but we do get to pick how we respond to the challenges that we face. And on this Mother's Day, we just don't want to honor moms. We want to learn from moms. We want to learn from one particular mom named Ruth. I love the way God has designed the scriptures, because it's just ordinary people. And this is no exception, but this is an ordinary person that makes an extraordinary choice. Her name is Ruth, and because Ruth was a mother and a grandmother, she experienced some really difficult things. She experienced some challenges upon challenges, but Ruth made a choice. It was a seemingly small, insignificant choice, but it made a world of difference. So for those of you that are new to God or new to the Bible, I'd love for you to find Ruth's story. But Ruth didn't grow up in the faith. She didn't grow up with a strong education. She didn't grow up around people. But she did have a mother-in-law named Naomi and a sister-in-law named Orpah. And for the first 10 years, these three women lived well. They lived generously. And Ruth and Naomi and Orpah, unfortunately, 10 years later, experienced the exact same challenge. Each woman lost her husband, became a widow. Each woman felt deep emotional pain. Each woman was dirt poor and with no one to provide for them and protect them. Each woman lost her home, and they were on the move trying to make ends meet. All three women experienced the exact same challenges, but each one responded differently to the challenges that they faced. Orpah gave up her name, walked away from her family and her faith. Naomi was so overwhelmed by the challenges that she faced that she changed her name from Naomi, which means sweet, to Mara, that means bitter, because that's how she felt, bitter at God. But Ruth picked differently. Ruth picked differently. She did not respond by walking away from her family or walking away from her faith. Ruth made this seemingly small, insignificant choice that made a world of difference, and it causes us to remember her name and to reflect on her life. You see, long before Ruth became a mother or a famous grandmother, she overcame some very difficult challenges. And today we're going to look at her life, though briefly, to overcome the challenges that we face. So if you have your Bibles, I'd love for you to find Ruth chapter 1, verses 3. The words are going to be on the screen. I'm going to read them for you, and then we're going to pause a few moments and then center in on that main truth. But in Ruth chapter 1, verse 3, we read this. "Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah, the other Ruth. After they had lived about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing them food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where they had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to the dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought that there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and had gone and gave birth to two sons, would you wait for them to grow up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It's more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." And at this they wept again. See, that's how Naomi felt. She saw the challenges that she experienced and thought it was the hand of God, that God was against her. So she was bitter at God. And then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. But Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." See, Orpah gave up on her family, gave up on her faith, and returned to Moab. She didn't go with her family to Bethlehem. But Ruth made a different choice. With the exact same challenges in front of her, Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people, my people. Your God, my God. Where you die, I die. And there I will be buried. I'll be buried." And we got to remember, Ruth had options, right? She was beautiful. She was young. She was resourceful. And she could have left her mother-in-law, most likely to die, but she could have left her mother-in-law. But Ruth replied, "I'm committed to you. I'm staying next to you. Where you die, I will die. Where you go, I will go." And then Ruth said these words, "May the Lord deal with me ever so severely if anything but death separates you from me." Now, notice the word "Lord" is in capital letters. And there are many words for God in Hebrew, but when you see all letters capitalized in English, it means Yahweh, Israel's personal God. Ruth, this pagan Moabite, placed her faith in Yahweh, the one true God. And her faith moved her to action. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. Ruth was determined. Ruth was relentless. Ruth did not fall back into a life of safety. She fell forward to a life of service. And it all came down to this seemingly small choice. Do I go with my mother-in-law, or do I go home with my family? Do I listen to the one true God, or do I go my own way? Do I care for myself in all my challenges, or do I care for this vulnerable widow named Naomi, my mother-in-law? And with limited knowledge of God, with very little resources, Ruth chose to serve. And God moved. God moved in Ruth's life in some amazing ways. I can't go into all the details now. You can read the story for yourself. But God gave Ruth a job. Now, it wasn't an easy job. She was gleaning the fields after the harvesters harvested the grain. She would pick up the pieces that were left over, but she had food to eat. She had food to give Naomi. Then God gave Ruth a husband. Now, she had to risk her life to go into his room late at night to ask him to marry her, but he did. Boaz married Ruth, and then God gave Ruth a home. I mean, it wasn't a big home, but it was enough to start a family, and then she got a child. God gave Ruth a child named Obed, and Obed became the great-great-grandfather of King David. See, God gave Ruth a job, husband, home, and a family, and then a legacy, because her name is recorded in the genealogy of Jesus. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. That's what God did for Ruth. Ruth stepped out in faith, and God moved in powerful ways. But here's the one truth that I don't want you to miss. Here's the truth that will help all of us that are experiencing challenges in our home, in our family, in our workplaces. Here's the truth that I don't want you to miss. God did all this. The job, the husband, the child, the legacy. He did all these things on Ruth's behalf without one miracle. There's no dreams, no angels, no manna from heaven, no water from a rock. God did all these things in Ruth's life with no miraculous means. God did this because Ruth made one small, seemingly insignificant choice. Do I go home or do I go with my mother-in-law? Do I go my way or do I follow God's way? Do I care for myself or do I care for someone else? And that seemingly small choice changed everything. And that's what we get to do today. We get to pull a Ruth. In the face of our overwhelming circumstances, in the challenges that you face at school or at home or on the farm, in your own health challenges or maybe in your financial challenges, in all the challenges in this world of pandemic, we get to pull a Ruth. We get to say, God, we trust you. You're Yahweh. You're our God. You're the creator and sustainer of the ever-expanding universe. We put our faith in you, and we're going to care for the most vulnerable. We're not just going to care for ourselves. We're going to care for those that are most vulnerable, that are in need of your care. See, today you get to express your faith in God the Father by caring for God's children, some of the most vulnerable children, through sponsorship. And maybe you've heard of sponsorship. Maybe you're already sponsoring children. I learned about sponsorship as a freshman at Bethel University. A young person stood up and talked about the children around the world. I said, I'll take one. I'll sponsor. I don't have a lot of money. I'm just a college student, but I'm in. I want to participate in your work in the world. And World Vision has been facilitating those types of relationships for the last 70 years. And what I love about World Vision, I joined World Vision about 3 years ago. I was a pastor for about 17 years. And what I love about World Vision is that we're Christ-centered, community-based, and child-focused. We're Christ-centered. Everything that we do is because of the love of God, and it's for the love of God. You may not know this, but every 11 seconds, a new child is either entering into a World Vision program where they can learn about Christ for the first time or grow in their relationship with God. Every 11 seconds. We work through local churches. Everything that we do is for God and because of God. We're Christ-centered and we're community-based. When we enter into a community in need, we don't come with answers. We come with questions. And it takes about a year to answer the questions. But the main question is this: what do you want for your children? So we gather business leaders, educational leaders, faith leaders, government leaders, and we have these long discussions. But it usually comes down to, we want our kids to have water. We want them to be healthy. You know, they're parents. Like what all parents want. We want our kids to have an education and a brighter future. And then they create their own vision for their future. And it usually includes water. World Vision, we're the largest NGO, non-government organization, largest Christian organization that provides clean water. Every 10 seconds, a new person is getting clean water. And because it's a community-based model, our water lasts 20 years sometimes longer than the average well. Because it's community-based. We're Christ-centered, community-based, and child-focused. Because we love the children of the world. And so when we enter into community and we have these community-based discussions, one of the questions that we ask is, where are the most vulnerable kids? And then the community leaders will say, okay, these are the kids that are most vulnerable in our community. And those are the children that get sponsored. All the kids receive clean water, education, and fullness of life, because for every one child that's sponsored, three additional kids get the benefits of sponsorship. But the most vulnerable kids get a relationship with a caring sponsor that's praying for them, that's concerned about them, that's building a relationship with them. So this is what God has been doing for the last 70 years. And right now, there's this epic opportunity to sponsor a child in Honduras. You may not be aware of what's happening in Honduras right now, but in this global pandemic, you know, with the shutdowns and the lockdowns and the kids not able to go to school and the deaths of the pandemic and the sickness, they've also been hit not with one, but two hurricanes. Thousands of people lost their homes, their lives, their livelihood, and are without hope. And Mike and I were on a call last week hearing about the emergency relief that's being provided to those families in need, but also the development work that's happening in the community. There's work that's being done agriculturally so that farmers are able to grow crops that last, and there's spiritual nurture happening in the lives of children. And God is doing a great work in Honduras, and it's all made possible through child sponsorship, through the generosity, $39 a month of sponsors that care for children. And typically, in a moment like this, I would invite you to go out to the lobby and you would see pictures of children from Honduras and to go and choose, make that seemingly small, insignificant choice to allow a child into your family, and you would sponsor that child. But God's been doing a fresh work in World Vision. The wind of the Spirit is blowing in a new way. And instead of you going out to the lobby to choose a sponsor, today, for the first time in the state of Iowa, this has been going around the nation just recently, for the first time, you get to go out into the cafeteria, or you can do it online, and take your picture so that the child can choose you. So we want to empower children to enter into their future. We want them to make the first move into the relationship. We're flipping the script, what Jesus did so often. He flips the script and allows us into his story and allows the children to choose their sponsor. There's currently about 9,691 children in Honduras waiting to be sponsored. And today, they're going to have a chance to choose you. Check out this video.
Power to choose in a child's hands. Oh, you guys, I love it. I shared a couple weeks ago, and I promised I'd share a little bit more over the course of this month about some of the stuff God's been doing in my heart, particularly as it relates to this vision the prophet Ezekiel had of water trickling out of the temple in Jerusalem. He followed the trickle, and as he walked, it grew, and it became first ankle deep, and then knee deep, and then waist deep, until eventually it was a thundering river. And Ezekiel looked around, and there were swarms of living creatures and flourishing trees drawing life from this stream of living water that began in the place God's people met to crash into God's presence together. As I've read and reread and prayed through that vision in Ezekiel 47 over the last couple months, it has refreshed in me this picture of the future of our church. This community of people chasing Jesus together we call Revision, being a source of blessing and flourishing for our city, our state, and our world. I think our world's desperate for somebody to do that in a season like this. If you guys are anything like me, the last 14 months have been so disorienting and so intense that it's been easy to get caught up focusing on all of the things we've lost. And we've lost a lot. It's not fair or helpful to pretend that we haven't, but I felt like God's been tugging at me saying, Mike, look at all you still have. Look at everything you guys still have to give to the needy people all around you. Revision is part of my plan to set all things right and make all things new. There are things I want done in the world that I've stamped the name Revision on. And I've become convinced that part of what that looks like is letting go of some of the things we have, some of what God's given us, to create a river of blessing that flows toward the most vulnerable people on our planet. What if we went all in for that today? What if we decided we're going to put our hands in the middle and we're going to take a step toward that together? What could change in our hearts, in our city, in our world? What could change in Sierra Linca, Honduras? Chad mentioned that the two of us this week had an opportunity to be on a Zoom call with some leaders on the ground, bringing fresh water and economic development and education and discipleship programs that help kids meet Jesus and know his love in Honduras. And it was fascinating to talk to them and hear a little bit more about the lives of these kids growing up in poverty in Sierra Linca. And maybe the most mind-blowing thing for me came from a Honduran leader named Nadia. And she said, when we think about kids drinking unclean water, we understand they may not feel well and they may get parasites, but there's actually a huge knock-on effect that people who don't grow up in that kind of poverty never realize. See, when kids get sick from drinking unclean water, they miss school, and then they fall behind in school, and then they quit school to the point where they can never finish, and that puts an economic lid on them for the rest of their lives. And also their families have to pay doctors. And in a subsistence economy, money spent on hospitals is money that cannot be spent on food or clothing or crops or starting or growing a business or getting access to the markets in order to sell your goods. And so clean water alone has this massive effect on household finances and on education in a way that redirects kids' lives. And so I just hopped off this call super humbled about the chance that we have to enter into relationship with some of these kids and help write a better story for them. Because I have come to the conclusion that you can only tell as great a story as you're willing to live. And you can only create as beautiful a future as the people you bring with you on the journey. The greatest, most epic lives are made with and found in the connections we develop along the way. So just how cool is it that we have a chance today to connect our stories, to like weave them together with kids growing up in poverty in Honduras? Toward the end of that Zoom call, this little Honduran girl named Evelyn, she's 12 years old, hopped on the screen and she said, if you sponsor us, we will be thankful to you forever. And it was the cutest, sweetest thing. I couldn't help but smile, but then it hit me like a holy slap in the face. She gets it. Like what she said when she said we'll be thankful forever wasn't just this simplistic, innocent, childlike hyperbole. Evelyn was saying, I'm not just going to be thankful for 10 years until I graduate from this program. I'm going to be thankful in 10,000 years because this program introduced me to the God who made me for relationship and gave up everything so that I could be in his family. And that's what's happening. The point leader for World Vision in Honduras, Jorge Galeano, hopped on the call. He said, my mission here is simple, food to feed their bodies, Jesus to feed their souls. And I realized, like, in eternity, I am going to be partying with Evelyn in the presence of Jesus. And that thought overwhelmed me a little bit. It might overwhelm you too, because I realized how much of my life I spend living for today instead of living for eternity. Like how frequently I'm focused and locked in on whatever's right in front of me rather than focused on living a life that echoes for eternity. A couple days after this Zoom call, my Bible reading plan had me in Isaiah chapter 1. There's this part of it where God's looking at his people and he's like, what do you think your sacrifices mean to me? Like all these bulls and goats, there's this habit you have of coming to the temple and doing that stuff. Like, how do you think that lands with me when I know that your hearts aren't in it? I'm so sick of like the just going through the motions faith. I'm tired of box-checking religiosity where you're saying the right things and maybe avoiding the right wrong things, but you don't love me, you don't care about the people around you. That's not it. You're missing it. I'm like, it's heavy for me to even watch it. I don't want to carry the weight of that anymore. And then in verse 17, God says this, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. We can step into that invitation today. Like right here, right now, in this moment, we have a chance to answer that call of God to his people by making this seemingly small, insignificant choice of allowing a child to choose us. That choice could change everything in the life of a kid, in the life of a mother this Mother's Day, in our lives, in yours and mine. There is a child in Honduras waiting to choose you. Like waiting to choose me. My family, we took our picture a little bit earlier. I can't wait to be chosen by a kid in Sierra Leone. And our staff took pictures. We would love it if you join us. We'd love it if every person in this room had a picture up in that room in Sierra Leone, Honduras this Wednesday when Revision Church hosts a choosing party so that they can choose us. And I can't help but wonder what God could do. What God could do if we decide to go all in today and say, hey, I'm ready to sponsor a kid. I'm ready to create space for one of the most vulnerable people on the planet to not just get clean water, but also get an education and also get discipled so that they know the love of the God who created them in his image. I think God could do big, crazy things. And so the question is, will you sponsor a kid today? Maybe you live in a world of different zeros, and you could sponsor two kids or one for every single member of your family. Maybe you don't have kids and don't want kids. You're sitting here thinking Mother's Day is never going to be like my thing. But today, on this Mother's Day, you could step into the story of an impoverished, oppressed Honduran mother and help her redirect the future of her kids. Wherever you're at today, what if you went all in? What could God do if we decide today that we're going to be Ezekiel's river? That we're going to be a community through which and from which flows this flood of blessing that brings flourishing to the world. I think he can do, I think he will do more than we could possibly ask or imagine. I can't wait to see it happen. And I'm going to invite Chad back up to tell us exactly what it looks like and exactly how we can step into this moment and be a part of what God's doing to set things right and make things new in Honduras.
This Wednesday, in 3 days, Revision Church is hosting a choosing party in Sierra Leone, Honduras. The bigger the party is dependent upon the people that participate. And the way that you can participate is really simple. For those of you that are online, for those of you that are here, it's the exact same process. You just text this number, you text revision to 56170. And then you follow the prompts, and then you discern how many children that you would like to sponsor, your payment preference, and then you take an epic photo. For those of you that are here, you can go into the cafeteria, you can grab your kids, take the most epic photo, or if you're an individual, you can go over there. Or if you're here and you'd like to take a picture at home, or for those of you that are online, you can take a selfie, the most epic selfie, and then we're going to upload your photos into two locations. First one is in Sierra Leone, in Honduras, on Wednesday. There'll be a wall where a child's going to come up and it's going to scan all the pictures and then choose you. And then you're going to be able to get that photo of the child. We'll take a picture of the child that chose you, and then next Sunday is the reveal, and you're going to see who chose you. It's a week turnaround. This is a beautiful thing. But we're also taking and uploading your photo onto Facebook, on a specific Revision Church Chosen Facebook page, so that we can interact with each other, so that we can see who's participating, so that even on Wednesday, you'll be able to see the choosing party happening. My colleagues in Honduras will post some of the images and the anticipation of the choosing party. Don't forget to tag yourself on the page so you can interact with each other online. But I can't wait to see your faces. I can't wait to see that wall filled up with images of people from Revision Church, because you've made that seemingly small choice to make a huge difference in the life of a child. You know, a couple of months ago, my colleague had a chance to go to a choosing party near Honduras in neighboring Guatemala. And while she was there, she noticed two mothers coming in with her children, and the children were dressed to the nines. I mean, they had their shoes shined, their clothes pressed, their hair combed, their faces washed, and they walked into the choosing party. But the mothers were a little bit nervous, a little bit anxious, kind of afraid of this experience. So my colleague said, "Hey, how are you feeling?" And the mothers replied, "You know, I'm scared. I'm a little nervous. I'm not sure my children will be chosen." She lives in poverty. She thought she needed to get her kids looking the best and the brightest so that her kids could be chosen, because that's what happens when you live in poverty. And so when my colleague said, "Oh no, your kids are already chosen. They're already part of the program. They get to choose their sponsor." The women started to weep. The mothers wept. There was no more shame, no more rejection, no more isolation. Their kids were already chosen. They get to choose their sponsor. That's what you get to create. You get to relieve the burden of the mothers in Honduras by allowing their children to choose you, by empowering the child to choose you, by resonating with that deep longing inside all of us to determine our own future. That's what these children are stepping into. And you got to remember, in poverty, they don't have a lot of choices. They don't get to choose what clothes they're going to wear. They don't get to choose if they get to go to school, because they can't. They don't have that much. My colleague said they're going to remember this decision for the rest of their lives, the day they chose their sponsor. And isn't it kind of cool to be chosen? I mean, don't we all want to be chosen deep inside? We want to be chosen. We want to be seen. We want to be heard. I had a colleague that, a friend said that she was a little nervous to take her picture. So instead of taking it here at the church during a church service, she said she brought it home because she felt like she needed to prop up her photo. She said, I was feeling, you know, she said, "Chad, I've never been chosen before. I mean, not in the ways that matter most. No man has ever asked me to marry him. And so I felt like I needed to prop up my picture. So I took my cat and I put my cat and I took this epic selfie with my cat." And then the picture went to Bangladesh, and she learned that a five-year-old boy named Mohammed chose her. And she immediately thought to herself, "It's because of my cat. Like, there's no reason this kid saw anything in me that would prompt him to choose me." But then she read the letter, because that's what the kids do. After they choose you, they write a little letter about why they chose you. And this is what Mohammed wrote. "You have a nice smile. You're very beautiful. Looks like you're good with cats." And she said, I do have a nice smile. I am beautiful. And by golly, I am good with cats." And God spoke to her about her identity in Christ through the voice of a child. That's what God is doing through Chosen. And that's your opportunity to relieve the burden of a mother, to empower a child to choose, to experience for yourself the beauty, the wonder of being chosen by God. As the band comes up, let me just pray over you and invite you to make that seemingly small, insignificant choice that makes a world of difference in your life and the life of a child. God, we pause and thank you for your love for us. We thank you that your power is made perfect in weakness. And we know that we don't have it all together, that we're all weak, we're all broken, and yet you invite us to participate in your redemptive work in the world. You could solve all the world's problems all by yourself, but you say, no, I want my church to rise up and to reach out beyond themselves for the sake of others, to experience the joy of connecting with a child, to build those relationships, to cross those barriers, and to be a vision of flourishing in this world. So God, I thank you for this moment that we can share together, and we just ask that you, Holy Spirit, that you would have your way in our hearts and in the lives of the children and the moms in Honduras. And we pray all this in Jesus' name.